And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Friday already, and together again, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and you all right here at 77 WABC. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. Exciting outside. I just came in through a blinding rain. Did look like nighttime, and enormous lightning and heavy rain, and then... by the time I got to the front door of this building, you could see blue sky.
Let us hope that there is.
But it's all moving out Long Island. So Queens and Brooklyn got hammered after Manhattan. The Bronx and Staten Island, to some extent, escaped. There's still some there. And now it's heading out Nassau and Suffolk.
To this week to the north, storms again. We had a tornado up in Westchester a week ago,
yep.
And then more storms this week. Queens without power still. What has Con Ed been talking to you about?
I understand what has happened because of the almost 100-degree temperatures. There was enormous demand on their network. That happens all the time. They keep telling me for reasons that they do not know.
Excuse me, a situation that kind of demand they normally handle.
Well, every other network in the city, all the other parts of Con Ed handled it. One network did not, and there was a major failure. And everything's come out of that, and all of this is concentrated in one area in Queens, basically Long Island City and the surrounding communities. The rest of the city is fine, and the people who are really being inconvenienced and hopefully not seriously hurt. I mean, our first priority is to make sure that nothing is life-threatening. After that, everything else is less important. So we have, for a number of days, tried to make sure that we had more police presence, fire department presence, giving people access to emergency care. And the good news is there was no spike in crime and no spike in demand for emergency services greater than the rest of the city. That's good news. We've also, for the last week, tried to help Con Ed by taking off of their network everything where the city was buying power from Con Ed so that they had more power for everybody else.
And
so
this is why the subways went down as well.
Subways
right?
work slower, although still continue
right.
to work. Rikers Island, we have generators and put those on. We asked Citicorp, and they were very cooperative, and closed their big building over in Long Island City early and sent people home so that they went offline. The city's Department of Environmental Protection, the sewage treatment plants, we went on to emergency backup generators so that we could help. But Con Ed's problem, and they still do not know why, and I just talked this morning to the Kevin Burke, who runs Con Ed, and we will get answers as to why. But at the moment, they do not know why this one network failed and all the other networks worked. My priorities first is not assessing blame, figuring out what happened. It isn't even figuring out how we can keep it from happening again. My first priority is to get the power back up for the people there and to make sure that while that happens, while Con Ed is working on it and giving them as much help as we can, that we provide all of the other services. So we've increased sanitation services, and we've opened a center at 4522 32nd Place, which is right by the intersection of Queens Boulevard, Van Dam Street, and Thompson Avenue. And it's a one-stop shop for all city services. But we've got lots of people on the street. So if you have a problem, you can pick up the phone, 311-911. If your phones don't work, walk out in the street, and you're likely to run into somebody from the city, and they will make a call or ask one of your neighbors that has a
They are phone. Obviously clothed and labeled. I mean,
yeah, well, a police officer and fire. Okay, yeah, I mean, so, you know, right. We've got a mobile command center out there. We've added auxiliary cops. Our small business services are working with all the businesses. I mean, the city's trying to do everything it can. The one thing the city can't do is we don't have crews that can go out and help Con Ed. I have talked to Richard Kessler, who runs Long Island Power Authority. They volunteered crews. Con Ed has accepted their offer and is using some of them, but is using them up in Westchester to fix overhead lines. They don't have the expertise to work in the manholes. The city system that's buried, I gather, is very different, and you have to have people that are trained. The good news is they've got all of the main feeder cables that went out fixed, or virtually all. The bad news is the low voltage network that is what you really connect your house to has lots of problems. They don't know how many. They can't tell until they fix one, and then they go to the next manhole and see if there's power there. And if it's not, they got a problem.
Do you happen to know technically, is it the transformer or is it the actual cables that fry or whatever happens to them?
It's both, everything else. Sure. I mean, the stuff, you know, when things get very hot, because of a lot of power draw, they tend to burn out. Now, keep in mind, the Con Ed system that's underground, the manhole floods, the power cables in it keep going. I mean, you know, otherwise we'd have real problems. Generally, it's a pretty reliable network. The other problem they have is they have no ways of measuring whether or not there's power to your house.
They can't tell if my lights are up.
They cannot tell from their computers. What they did the other day is they made an estimate of 1,000, 2,000, some number like that, of customers being out. Now, number one, I don't know what a customer is. Customer can be a house where one person lives, house where five people live, can be a building where there are 10 families in it, you don't know, or bigger. Number two, their estimates at the beginning were based on how many people called up and said, my power's not working. Because that's the way they normally do it. You can question whether that's an intelligent way to do it, but this limited number of things. They, based on that, said 1,000, 2,000 people or customers. I, yesterday, in talking to them, demanded that they take a look, and they drove down almost every street. It got so late that apparently at that point they said, well, everybody's gone to bed. You don't know whether people have power. You can't tell from looking. And they tried to actually look. If it was one house in a block that didn't have lights on, you assume that there's power there because typically everybody in that block would be out or nobody. If all of the block is dark, they assume that all of those people are without power. Based on that number, they get a number of 25,000 customers. Is the 25,000 customer a good number? You know, these are estimates. The real issue is not how many. The real issue is how fast can they open up every manhole and fix if there is a problem.
What estimates are they talking to you?
They are still saying, as of 20 minutes ago, that they believe the vast bulk, almost everybody, will be fixed by the end of the weekend, which is today, Saturday, tomorrow, and Sunday. Now, does that mean that on Monday there won't be a handful of people without? Listen, a handful of people out all the time, so that's always a problem. Is it a good estimate? They are professionals. It's their business. And the city has to deal with whatever estimates they make and act accordingly. I'm annoyed that their estimate of 1,000, let's say, or 2,000 was one-tenth of what their estimate is now because we might have thrown more resources into the area. Although, I will say, the police obviously had adequate resources because there was no spike in crime. Ambulances, we did have adequate because there was no extra demand. But we have to continue to do everything we can to assist them. And then 2 weeks from now, they've promised me a great study, which we'll then have to take a look at and see what they could have done differently, what was different about this one network, and how we can prevent this in the future. In the meantime, we have our Human Resources Administration, our Health and Hospitals Corporation, Small Business Service, Community Assistance Unit, Department of Consumer Affairs, the Red Cross, our Office of Emergency Management has a big coordination center there, police, fire. We've got every agency doing everything we can.
I also understand that for those that have lost food and perishable items, there is a way to collect.
Call 311. We've made provisions, so we'll send you the forms of how you can go and get reimbursed by Con Ed.
That applies to businesses as well.
Yeah,
commercials.
Businesses, commercial.
As well as
but
commercial.
The commercial is a little bit different because we're trying to go to every one of them. That we can do. We can go to every one of our small business service. We can probably visit or almost all of them. But what we've been trying to do from the day we first had the problem is making sure that, number one, everybody's life is protected. And then number two, you get it down to the inconvenience and doing everything we can to help Con Ed. Piling on Con Ed, everybody wants to do it. It's nice. But I want to get the problem, the immediate problem fixed, and then find out what the problems were and why.
Fortunately, the weather has moderated. The temperature,
that is helpful. So, open your window. It's not as hot as it would. If it would be much worse, if it was 100 degrees, then it could be life-threatening. Right. We have cooling centers open, and we do all of that stuff. We provide food and water, and if you're lacking in medicines, that's why the Health and Hospitals Corporation is there. We can do all of that. The only thing I can urge you, if it's a problem, call 311 or 911, and it's just going to take a few days. And we can yell and scream, but my main concern is safety.
All right, let's take a break, and we will be right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. John Gambling here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. Before we let's move away from the city for just a moment. A lot of New Yorkers are obviously invested in various ways in Israel and the Middle East. A horrible situation.
Terrible, terrible situation. And you know, it's not. I had a breakfast yesterday at Gracie Mansion, which we have breakfasts all the time. I try to invite different groups in this morning. I had a group of clergy people from Harlem, but we'll have every ethnicity, every religion, every part of the city. And it's a ways to communicate and listen to what's on their minds. Anyways, yesterday's breakfast, about 80 people, Arab Americans, and they were not just Muslim Arab Americans. There were Jewish Arab Americans and Christian Arab Americans. And, you know, we tend to think of groups as homogeneous, and they're not. They're very diverse. And a couple of them said to me, you know, you came out very strongly for Israel and defending Israel, which you did. You know, what about, I have family in Lebanon. There are a number of them Lebanese. And your heart has to go out to them. Look, number one, our city has to be open to everybody and tolerant to everybody. And I particularly feel that that's my responsibility. Given my background, I should be fighting for that. But this is a tragedy taking place around the world. The Israelis have responded to a terrorist organization attacking them. And I've always been a hawk on doing so. But there's no question there are people, innocent people, that are killed, not just in the Middle East. You look what happened in Mumbai, in India. You look what happens in so many places around the world, whether it's genocide or terrorism just directed at a particular building or something. The world has many things. I can't quite explain why, and our sympathy has to go out to all of them.
And the fight against terror, wherever that terror happens to be, as you just pointed out, directly affects the safety of the citizenry of New York City.
I think anybody that thinks, and too many did think this, hopefully they think less now, they thought, oh, terrorism, that's somebody else's problem in some other place. And countries that close their eyes to terrorists passing through or money for terrorists passing through them all of a sudden have been struck, and they say, oh, wait a second, I didn't think it was going to happen to us. Listen, in America, we never thought that terrorism was something that was an American problem. Those oceans are very big while we trade internationally. You know, we're not in Europe. If you got into a taxi cab in one country in Europe and had a currency in your pocket only from another country, cab driver might be annoyed, but he would understand, and they'd go to a bank and he'd get paid. In America, we only use one currency. We really are very far away and have always thought that we were protected by the oceans, or just we never thought about it. And then all of a sudden comes along things like the bombing back in 93, and then the terrible tragedy of September 11th, 01. All of a sudden we realize we are part of the world. And you've had bombings in London and Madrid and Moscow and Indonesia and India and so many other places. It's a dangerous world, and we're all engaged in the same fight against terrorists. And I think you never negotiate with terrorists. You never negotiate with somebody with a gun in your head. Once you start to show that kind of weakness, it is a very slippery slope, and you're not protecting anybody.
You're a man that has the opportunity to talk with people from other countries, and one of the things that disappoints me, and we'll spend a second more on this topic, is that there seems to be no world solidarity on this fight, because as we've just discussed, it affects us all. And what do you hear in your international circles when you're talking with those people? Do business people understand this, or again, is this just the problem of government?
Well, businesses certainly have the problem because they have their employees around the world, which they have to protect. They have their employees going from one country to another. So the transportation, the ability to get in and out of countries is a very serious concern. Security, the bigger, the more international the company, the more people they would have devoted to it. There's a different level of attention paid. In New York City, we have 1,000 police officers devoted to intelligence and counterterrorism. Other major cities in this country have 5 or 10, I mean, or none.
And around the country, around the world, rather?
Around the world. Some countries think that it's somebody else's battle. Mm-hmm. Some understand it's theirs. And then there's all different views on what you do. I don't think that country should be allowed to do X, and I think we should sanction them. But you say, but wait a second, my country trades with them. And so, you know, there's this you look at the United Nations. Everybody's against terrorism, but when it comes to sanctioning a particular country or just verbally or taking away from a particular country trade, all of a sudden, it's very hard to put together a group that's willing to stand up and say, we will do without those jobs, do without those exports, do without those imports in the interest of long-term trying to force that country to be more responsible. And you have very worrisome things, North Korea and Iran, nuclear weapons we're talking about. It is very scary. And when you say, well, let's build a consensus, you'd think everybody, particularly in Europe, would be with us to fight terrorism. No, they're not. You'd think everybody in Asia would be with us to fight terrorism.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. I mean, that's the real conundrum here. You can agree or disagree with our government's approach to any of this, but there's no easy answer for them.
Are you optimistic or pessimistic that there will be a coming together here, or is this just the way of the world and we will do the best we can to individually take on whatever threats we have?
I don't think you can win the battle individually. I think you have to do things together. Sadly, the only thing that may unite us is more victims, more incidents. Although 9/11, you would have thought focused everybody. How often do we have to have a 9/11 to keep us focused? It was 2 years later. Everybody was off on doing their own thing.
Even in America, you walk outside of New York City or get too far away, and people start to think less and feel less threatened by terror.
Well, what I want, my responsibility is New York City, to keep our guard up as much as we possibly can, and at the same time, not let the terrorists force us to lock ourselves in our home, because then they'd win without doing anything. So it's that fine balance. But the country has that on a different level internationally. And you can see how controversial the war is in Iraq and Afghanistan and whether or not that has anything to do with fighting terrorism. Some people would argue it doesn't. Some people argue it does. You can see the impact on the political process. Just take a look at Lieberman and what's going on in Connecticut.
It's really fascinating, isn't it, to watch? Hey, listen, we've got lots more with Mayor Michael Bloomberg as we continue at 77 WABC. Half-hour break time. 77 WABC. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. A trash plan has been approved by the city council.
Many, probably decades in the making.
Yeah, what are you, a magic man? I mean,
no. I think it's for a start, you always got to give credit to those that came before you. For many years, other mayors have tried. Everybody tries. Lots of environmentalists have tried. So, you know, when you do something, it's built on everything that happened before, both pro and con. Some things against, but whatever. This time, I think it was an awful lot of good work on the administration's part, a group that incidentally my daughter, when she worked pro bono for the city, was part of. I gave her credit. She was thrilled when I told her that. And at the other end of City Hall, Chris Quinn, the speaker, deserves a lot of credit. Particularly since one of these facilities is in a neighborhood she represents, then there's on Staten Island. And Staten Island is particularly important here because, remember, that's where
the problem started,
the dump was. So Andy Lanzer and Jimmy Otto and Michael McMahon all deserve a lot of credit as well. But there's a lot of things coming together. And what we're trying, and a lot of support from a lot of environmental organizations. Here's the issue. The city generates roughly 22,000 tons of solid waste a day. Roughly half of it is commercial, taken away by private carters. Roughly half of it is residential, taken away by the Department of Sanitation. I've tried to do a study to figure out whether our sanitation department does things more or less efficiently than the private sector. And it's a little bit hard to make the comparisons because sanitation has to go every place. Commercial only goes where it's profitable. Sanitation also has to plow the streets and sweep the streets and empty the litter baskets at the corner
parks.
And clean vacant lots. And Parks Department does some of it, but they do it as well. You're right. What it looks like is actually our sanitation department does things reasonably efficiently. It happens to be a very well-run agency with a very well-run union that's willing to use new equipment and change with the needs of the city, and it's great jobs. In return for that, they've gotten well compensated, and so and it's got people who work for the sanitation department tend to be happy campers. It's a good job. They like it. They stay there and whatever. Anyways, to get back to this, most of this stuff has gotten taken away by the truck that picks it up in the corner, goes to some place, in many cases, where they're put on these big, long trailer trucks, and then they're driven through our tunnels, across our bridges, down our streets, all the way down to Pennsylvania and Virginia, where there are lots of waste facilities that are willing to take this trash, and they get paid very well for it. Why? I've never gotten a good answer why, given all the land we have upstate, we can't find some communities upstate that would be a lot easier
from it.
Benefit from it, but that's a whole separate issue. What we've tried to do is to find a more intelligent ways of moving the trash out of the city. And the basis of the plan is if you're in the Bronx, you take it, you stuff it into containers, you compact it, you put those containers on trains, and then they leave.
Out of the Bronx.
Out of the Bronx. If you look at a map, the other parts of this city, Brooklyn and Queens are on an island. Manhattan is an island. Staten Island is an island. And so you have to get it off those islands. And when you look at a map, the one thing that stares you right in the face is one method of transportation gives you lots of alternatives. It's called
boats.
Waterborne. Right.
Boats. Yeah.
The problem with that, everybody says, hey, great idea, except that where do you get to the water? We either have built in the Robert Moses days as we built roads that cut us off from the water, or today what we're trying to do is to have parks along the water, and nobody wants a place in their neighborhood where the trucks congregate. We've come to a compromise, a variety of places where on the water you will have a facility where the truck drives on, dumps it into a compactor. The compactor puts it into the container and compresses it so you get a lot more in a container. The container goes on a barge. That barge then goes someplace where there's a facility that can pick the container up and either put it on a ship or put it on a train. Now, the only places they can go is where we have those kinds of cranes and facilities and where there is rail or deep water that big boats can get in, which limits it down. By the time you get all done, there aren't a lot of alternatives. But this is a plan that's as good as I think we can come up with to reduce the amount of traffic on our roads, which rips up the roads and pollutes the air.
Costs money fixing the road.
Costs money to fix roads. It is not cheap. It's not saving us a lot of money. But it is a more environmentally friendly way to do it, and almost all environmental groups are thrilled with the plan. I think there's no resistance to it except from communities where the facilities are located that get you access to the water. And in all fairness, they got to be someplace. Everybody says, not in my backyard, but it's got to be in somebody's backyard.
I was surprised to read that you hope to recycle about a quarter of the waste, which is a big turnaround from where we've been.
Where we've been. But what's happened over time is that the mechanics, the science of separating out recycling stuff and getting it, using it, have gotten somewhat better, so the economics are starting to get a little bit better. Germany, for example, recycles an enormous percentage of their trash. They're cutting back because it just costs so much to do it. It may very well be that recycling sounds fine, but if it costs you more to recycle than it would be to start from scratch, maybe it's
We've
not a good
We've been in
thing.
A start-and-stop situation with recycle.
Partially because it's never made as much economic sense. So we do it when it's fashionable and then walk away from it in
when
tough economic times. Right. And what you really want to do is find a way so you can do it in good markets and bad markets.
All right, well, and when does this
And we're
start?
Getting there.
And when does this new program get into
Some
gear?
Things going ahead right away. Some things, invariably, you will have the normal court challenges and that sort of thing, but we're adamant. This is a plan that benefits the whole city. Christine Quinn and these other, the rest of the city council deserves a lot of the credit, as do all the people on my staff who've worked to make this. Ed Schuyler, my deputy mayor, has really spearheaded the effort. Before him, my former chief of staff, Peter Madonia, now works for the Rockefeller Foundation, did it for years. And it's a combination of everybody working.
On a similar subject, bread and butter kind of stuff, infrastructure stuff, the water, the story this week about silt in the reservoirs and the system and the potential enormous cost of a filtration plant.
We have basically two systems that serve this city with water. One is the Croton system. Think of it as everything to the east of the Hudson River. That water, by federal law, has to be filtered. We haven't been doing it. We get fined every day. We are building a filtration plant under Van Cortlandt Park, under a golf driving range, which is, but we'll get that back, and you'll never even know it's there underground. And they are coming along, and it'll be another few years before it's done. That will put us in compliance with federal law to filter the Croton system. Everything to the west of the Hudson River, the water is so pure it does not require filtering, and we want to keep it that way. How do you keep water clean? One of the things the city does is we are buying land upstate New York and in other places that is around the reservoirs so that there's not the development. It's great for nature, but from our selfish point of view, it keeps the water from getting polluted, and downstream when it gets to us, keep it from needing filtration and chemicals and that sort of stuff.
All right. So, and there's nothing more important than water for obviously for a city to survive.
You cannot survive without it, which is why we keep investing even in tough times. Even when our budget crisis was, we had a budget crisis at 5 years ago. We kept investing in this water tunnel. We are building a new water tunnel. If a water tunnel failed, you'd be in the same situation as if there was a drought.
Fairly confident that filtration for that system
it should be okay.
Should be okay. Aren't going to need it. Term limits. You mentioned Speaker Quinn. She's been investigating term limits in the city council. You've never been a fan of term limits, have you?
Well, number one, I think term limits are a good idea because whether it's in private sector or in public sector, new blood is always good, new ideas. We all get into a job and we spend from the day the job starts through today learning what can't be done. A new person comes in and doesn't know, they're not smart enough to know it can't be done, and they go out and they do it. And some people say, oh, well, I get more effective with time. There's no study that shows that. You get less effective with time, I would argue. I've never heard anybody run for office saying, well, I can't do anything for the first 8 years, but then I'll be effective. They don't say that. They say I can do something right away, and hopefully they can. But whether you agree with term limits or not, I thought the Post, both the Post and the News, I think, had editorials, and one of them said it right. They said they didn't happen to agree with term limits, but they said the public has spoken twice. We've had two polls on this. They were called elections. The public clearly knew what they were voting for. They overwhelmingly voted for term limits, and that's what we should be living with, and that's the basis on which they elected the people who are in office, including me, and we should all plan on other careers afterwards and hope that our successors are even better than we are. You always want to have somebody succeed you that builds on what you do and takes what you've done to even higher levels. I'm going to live in this city for the rest of my life, and I hope that to whoever succeeds me takes the city to even greater heights. Certainly don't want them to not do that.
Not waste what's been done so far. 1-800-848-WABC is our telephone number, 1-800-848-WABC. We will take a break. When we come back, you will be part of the questioning as well. Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77.
News Talk Radio 77, WABC.
We roll on our Friday get-together on the John Gambling Show. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here as well. Report summer schools. Truancy, one-third of those attending, not? Is that...
truancy or
fairly
attendance
accurate.
Rate, depending on how you want to measure it, the glass being full or empty, it's about like it was last year. The kids at the lower grades, elementary and junior high school, you get high attendance, and high schools you get low attendance. Part of the answer is in the lower schools, maybe they know there's a consequence. They want to graduate with their classmates or go on to the next year, and they know they've got to do it. I would argue that it is really that you can tell elementary and junior high school kids what to do. It's a lot harder to tell adolescents what to do. The sad thing is that the adolescents are running out of chances. The younger kids, you can argue, they have another chance. As you get older, you get fewer opportunities to recover from a bad education, and it really is tragic.
This is one of those things you just have to accept. I mean,
well, we have, you know, you go out,
but
you work at, you got to try to convince the parents to explain to their kids why and to force their kids. And a lot of some kids don't have parents. Some kids' parents don't understand it. Some kids' parents don't want to get involved. Some kids' parents try very hard, and the kids just don't listen. But this is in the kids' interest to get an education. Yesterday, this group that we gave diplomas to at City Hall, a group called the organization Strive, and to strive to make something out of yourself. And you look at the 60 or 70 kids in the audience, they are now, they've completed a six-month program. They're all going to be in apprentice programs for construction jobs. These kids will go out and make a very good living with enormous stability. The construction industry has got business. Everybody's going to be employed for the next, you know, for a long time. You can just, because of the contract, you know how many jobs are going to be. And we sit here and we wring our hands and we write these stories about what happens when kids, when adults can't get jobs and they fall into a life of crime or poverty or whatever. And here we've got a group of kids we're doing something about, and you know it's hard to find anybody interested, but we are making progress.
Let's go to the telephones. 1-800-848-WABC. See a name you want to start with?
Well, let's try Jack in Brooklyn.
Jack in Brooklyn, your question for the mayor, please.
Hello, Your Honor. It's my pleasure to speak to you.
Hi.
And John, hello.
Good, Jack.
Mr. Mayor, I have a small problem. Real estate taxes have been steadily going up, and I'm a middle-class guy who finally made an investment in a small piece of property near Coney Island about 5-6 years ago, and my taxes this year went from $17,000 to $50,000. And I can't get heads or tails out of anybody in the city. I've been writing letters like crazy.
Okay, well, number one, I don't know in the specific case of this piece of property. If you stay on, can we make sure we get his
name
and phone number, and I'll have somebody call you and explain it. I don't know what that particular spot is. The real estate taxes in this city are they went up when we raised all the taxes, but that was mitigated by the tax rebate. What's probably happening, although this sounds like it's not the same thing, this is obviously a reassessment or something. Generally, real estate taxes go up with property values, but don't go up anywhere near as fast. There are caps as to how fast they can go up in any 1 year and over any 3 or 4 year period or whatever. We as a society have the problem of we don't want to pay taxes and we want more services, and somebody's got to pay. The alternatives the city has are real estate taxes, real estate transfer taxes, which have been a big boon to the city and the reason we've had surpluses as much as anything, sales taxes, income taxes, and then a broad group of what a lot of people would call nuisance taxes. They're small taxes which were either put in to encourage a certain kind or discourage a certain kind of economic activity or just to raise money where nobody was paying any attention. But the big revenue generators are the income tax, the sales tax, and the property taxes. And if you need more money, no matter which one you raise, you annoy a different group of people. We all probably pay all three of them either directly or indirectly, but more or less. So if you don't notice it because it's built into your rent, property taxes are less important. If you're a homeowner or a piece of property owner like this gentleman is, it is a problem.
All right. You want to take another one here?
Sure. Why don't we take a call from Harriet in Astoria.
Harriet, you've got the question. You've got the mayor's attention. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? I have a question to address concerning Con Ed. I live in the Astoria area. And basically, I know that you gave out the 1-800-75-CON-ED yesterday when you made your
yep.
press conference. However, I called this number multiple times, and each time I have a problem, and I know that this problem basically concerns other residents too. People will have electricity in one floor, in one apartment, in the same house, and the other apartment won't have any electricity, or other people will only have one outlet running. Now, I need a number that is actually going to address technical issues instead of just whether it's going to be
fixed. What happens when you call 1-800-CON-ED?
What was that?
What happens when you call 1-800-CON-ED?
I called up four different times, and I got four different answers. Some of them said it wasn't ConEd's problem. Other ones said it was circuit problem. The other one said flat out that, you know what, I really don't know. And I asked, well, why was this number given to us by the mayor then? And she said, well, you know what, why don't you call up the mayor's office?
Now you've got the mayor, Harry.
Harriet, I love you.
Keep on trying to get right to the top.
Yeah, I mean, they shouldn't
Not
give
sure
you those kinds of
answers.
Number one, the first thing I would do is if you can, in your building, if there is a super, I don't know how big your building is, to try to find out why. If it's one apartment versus another, you would think that would be in the building, but I don't know the wiring for that particular building. They do have different, you may have different accounts getting billed separately with different meters, and that may be the problem. The only thing I can suggest to you is I will, number one, I assume Con Ed is listening, and I will certainly repeat this to them again. Two, I think that if you stay on the line, we will get your number here, and I will have somebody from Con Ed call you. Now, I can't go out there with a screwdriver and fix it, but we are going to get you this number. The sad thing is, this shouldn't have happened, but we don't know why. Most important thing, make sure nobody dies or gets hurt, and then help Con Ed to get it back up. And then we'll go and try to figure out why and point fingers and beat people over the head and all this sort of stuff.
As we all know, there is nothing worse than having no electricity when you're sitting there and you're the one without it.
But at least Harriet's trying to do something.
Exactly.
She has persistence, and we're going to get her an answer.
It's called gumption, and good for her.
Good for you, Harriet.
Good luck to us all on this, getting this up and running again, Mr. Mayor. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Looking forward to it.
All right, have a good weekend. Stick around. Janine Pirro will be joining us here. We'll talk about the state of the world and the state from her point of view. It's all next at 77 WABC. Opinions.